What if a change in who gets food stamps quietly takes away free school breakfast and lunch for millions of children, and almost no one notices until the cafeteria lines get shorter and the debt gets longer? The community eligibility provision lets the poorest schools give every student a free meal with almost no applications. It works because SNAP and Medicaid automatically identify large numbers of eligible kids. The 2025 changes to those programs are shrinking that pool. The schools that lose enough identified students may lose the ability to keep offering universal free meals. This was sold as SNAP reform. It is also school meals policy by another name. What is CEP and why has it spread so fast? The community eligibility provision lets high poverty schools and entire districts serve free breakfast and lunch to every single student without collecting household income forms. Close to half of all National School Lunch Program schools now use it. No applications, no stigma, no unpaid meal debt chasing families. Participation goes up, kids are fed, schools save on paperwork. What makes CEP financially possible? Reimbursement is based on the identified student percentage, the share of students who are automatically certified for free meals because their families are on SNAP, Medicaid, TANF, or in foster care. The higher that percentage, the better the federal funding. Many schools need an ISP of 62.5% or higher to break even without putting local money in. How do the 2025 SNAP changes affect this system? The reconciliation bill expanded work requirements, tightened eligibility, and made other changes that reduce SNAP participation, especially among working-age adults and some families. Fewer SNAP households means fewer children who are directly certified. That directly lowers the ISP for schools and districts that were relying on that data. What do the estimates say about the scale of the risk? Analyses from the Urban Institute and others project that the SNAP changes alone could put roughly 7.5 million students at risk of losing automatic free meal access or push schools to drop or weaken CEP because reimbursement falls below what they can sustain. That is not a small side effect. What actually happens when a school's ISP drops too far? The school either has to find extra local money to keep serving everyone for free, or it drops CEP and goes back to applications. Applications bring back stigma, lower participation, administrative costs, and unpaid meal debt. Some schools that were barely making CEP work financially may have no choice but to stop. Which places are most exposed? Schools and districts with ISPs in the 40 to 70% range, right around or below the comfortable reimbursement thresholds. Hundreds of thousands of students in states like Pennsylvania attend CEP schools in that vulnerable band. When direct certification numbers fall, these are the first to feel the pressure. Was any of this discussed as a school meals consequence when the SNAP changes were debated? The public debate focused on work requirements and federal spending. The downstream effect on the data that powers universal school meals was rarely mentioned. Yet the mechanics are direct. Cut SNAP participation among families with children, and you cut the automatic certification that makes CEP run. Is there any way to protect universal meals if SNAP and Medicaid keep shrinking? Some states are looking at other data sources or raising local funds. But the elegant, low-burden power of CEP came from using existing federal program data. When that data shrinks, the elegance disappears and the old problems of applications and uneven access reappear. The 2025 SNAP reforms did more than change grocery benefits. They are structurally weakening one of the best tools we have for feeding children without stigma or paperwork by reducing the very eligibility records that make universal free school meals workable at scale. The only coherent response is to treat the direct certification pipeline as a public good worth protecting, either by shielding SNAP and Medicaid eligibility for families with school-age children or by building stable alternative identification systems so that high-poverty schools can continue to feed every student without the old barriers returning. The children who lose access will not see a line item for school meals in the SNAP debate, but the data connects the two. Once you see the connection, the question is no longer whether the programs are linked. It is whether we are willing to accept the consequences of pretending they are not.